Welcome back to the Birthlink Podcast. I'm so glad you guys are here. I hope you had an amazing 4th of July and you got it off and you're not burning up. It's pretty hot everywhere, I know, but welcome summer. I'm so glad it's here. I'm feeling great. Working hard in my new office and just, yeah, keeping busy. It's just form after form with starting an agency, I swear, but I'm okay. I'm good with that. And I'm building my community. I'm getting my clients as they roll in, doing some massage work, fascia and muscle work, and just supporting pregnant women as best and the moms and the other doulas in my area the best I can. And yeah, I feel very, very lucky to be able to do this. And I'm just pushing through. So today I won't lie. Like, we were scheduling this since last summer to get her on this podcast and chat. And it was just like one thing after another, we kept having to reschedule. And we recorded this back in February, and it's finally time to get this published and out to you guys. And I'm just so excited. If you don't follow her already, I would go on to Instagram and follow her right now, because all her posts, I'm like, I just like it immediately. I share it. They're either funny or very educational or both. Everything she says, I just applaud and I agree with. The way she coaches and speaks and teaches, I'm very aligned with. It's all about knowing your options. And that's what I preach, right? And taking responsibility a bit more for your birth. And that's going to help you get that backbone to make those choices, right? And not just, like I said last week, right? You're pregnant. Okay, what's next? Okay, looking through my network and my insurance, which doctor is good? Okay, this one is near my house. All right, that's good. And then you go to this doctor and you're like, well, they didn't really spend much time with me and they're all right. And most people will just stick with that doctor. And they don't know other options. They don't know their choices. They don't even do any research on the options for your birthing location. So no, you can do better. You can do more. You don't know what you don't know. So, you know, maybe before birthing locations, I should have just said, hire a birth coach and a doula. So yeah, that might be the next one. Even before the doctor, before you get a doctor, hire your doula. There's a couple of reasons why, because they're going to charge you the same, whether you hire them at 8 weeks or 38 weeks, you're going to pay the same for their services. They're going to do those prenatal appointments with you, and then they're going to be at your birth, and they'll follow up with a postpartum or even extended postpartum, and you're going to get that no matter what. So having her to bounce off ideas or give you, you know, referrals to providers they work with, because no one knows them better from the outside than your doula, right? Especially in your area. If you want a coach, like a virtual coach, like me and Charlotte, we're not going to know like which doctor to go to, which hospital in your area, but we're definitely going to know what questions you need to ask them and how to prepare the best you can. I know you're tired in this first trimester and you just found out you're pregnant, but we can also guide you through loss, right? Or hiring a doula can do that if this, unfortunately, this birth would not work out. Like, you can also work with us through loss and miscarriage and just guiding you in education throughout your pregnancy. So I always start with mindset and breath work, because you really need to start practicing that. I mean, during your fertility, honestly, as soon as you become an adult, maybe more teenager should as well. But then you want to learn about nutrition and exercise during pregnancy, not at 32 weeks, not at 20 weeks, but as soon as you get pregnant, right? You just know the facts. And if you're just going to go with what the book, a birth book gives you, they don't know you and they don't know your specific situation. So hiring a doula and birth coach, even virtually, can really help you get that individual care and understanding on how to improve your outcomes. You want a smooth birth and empowered birth. However you choose, in whichever location you choose, a doula can be there with you, even virtually. You can text me, call me, FaceTime, whatever you need. We can make that possible. Okay. So she uses evidence-based pregnancy support to families who want empowering birth. And she has 10 years plus of clinical research experience, a biomedical science degree, and 2 hospital births under her belt. She has knowledge to provide pregnancy support to help you make informed decisions about your pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. And then she also provides in-person support for birth, including hospital births, and helping you to navigate that hospital system. Okay, let's get to it. Bring her in. I want to hear her birth story. I know you do too. And then tell why she got and how she works in the birth world. Welcome to the Birthlink Podcast, presented by My Friend's a Nurse. I'm your host, Kaleva Colliker, a high-risk labor and delivery nurse right here in sunny California. I'm also an OB-certified specialist, birth educator, lactation expert, and mother of 2 beautiful daughters. I am passionate about guiding you through the miraculous journey of pregnancy and childbirth, using evidence and history and asking the reason why. I have some incredible medical friends and colleagues, and we're all here to help you navigate this often overwhelming birthing hospital system in the United States. My goal is to gain trust in birth, improve this system, and provide some valuable insights. Let's make this journey a little less daunting and a lot more joyful. Let's get into it. Hello, Charlotte from Leeds, UK. I know our time difference is something else since I'm in California, but I'm so happy that you came and joined me today. We were just chatting that we do similar stuff, like you're a virtual doula. I'm not a doula, I'm a labor coach, but I mean, essentially we're the same, right?
Yeah, it does seem that way. Yeah, different names, same sort of thing.
Yeah. So let's dive in. First, Charlotte, introduce yourself. Tell us about your story. What got you into birth work?
So I'm a real science geek. I'm a real nerd. And my first birth didn't quite go the way that I planned. So I have a biomedical science degree. I work in clinical research as kind of my day job, although the doula stuff is slowly taking over from that. And I really went into my first birth kind of doing all the real like prep, but kind of the surface level prep, like the prep given to you by the hospital, by like the standard antenatal classes. And I truly believed everything that was offered to me was going to be evidence-based, that I didn't know I had that much of a choice, I don't think, because obviously I worked in cancer clinical research. So when you have cancer, you go into a hospital, you do the treatment the doctor suggests, mostly. So I kind of approached both birth the same way. And I was low risk. Everything was going really well. I didn't choose a home birth because I worked in a hospital. That was my kind of environment. I felt comfortable there. So I thought that was the obvious place to go. I did plan to use, so in the UK, we have midwife-led units. So in the UK, you see a community midwife throughout your pregnancy. So you don't go into the hospital for any of your antenatal visits. So you just go to your local doctor's surgery, and usually there's a midwife there that you see, but then you choose where you're going to give birth. So there's like a local hospital, home birth, or sometimes there's midwife-led units. And then midwife-led units can be inside a hospital or they can be separate from a hospital. So the one that I chose was within a hospital. And in reality, you know, it's the same corridor as the labor ward. So it's just a couple of rooms at the end of the corridor separated by a pair of double doors where the rooms are a bit nicer. They all have birth pools. They have ensuite bathrooms. And the consultants, like the doctors, don't go past those double doors. If you need to see the doctors, you have to then transfer to the labor ward. So I was like, I'm going to give birth in the midwife-led unit. It's going to be great. I had enough kind of about me to do some research, and I went over my due date. I did accept some sweeps, and I did go into labor naturally. I think I was like 9 days over, so I was quite far, 40 plus 9. And I was allowed to use the midwife-led unit, even though I'd gone over, which was good. And I use the word allowed. I know now that I could have pushed for that, but it was quite smooth. And then when I was in labor in the midwife-led unit, everything was going really nicely. And my waters broke and there was meconium in my waters. which I now know is quite common for a baby that's gone past their due date. It was relatively thin meconium as well. So I decided, well, so it was, I was told that I had to go to the labor ward. I had to go on CTG monitoring. It was all very like quick, quick, rush, rush, panic, panic. And I was kind of taken down the corridor to the labor ward. And in the labor ward, I was immediately, I'd gone from being on all fours, kind of over leaning a beanbag. I'd gone, I was straight on a bed, straight on the continuous monitors. It was then switched to a clip or a sticker on the baby's head, which I know now that that's, it's not a sticker, it's a little wire that goes in their scalps. And when they put that in, the internal monitor, they found out I was 10 centimetres. So it was straight into coach pushing at that point. I had no urge to push. So I coach pushed for nearly 2 hours. I was getting doctors in and out, you know, we'll give you 10 more minutes and then we're going to have to prep for forceps, or we're going to have to help you out, might have to do an episiotomy. And I pushed my baby out without the urge to push. I had a second degree tear. I totally ruined my pelvic floor and my recovery was awful. I was very swollen. Everything was very sore down there just from doing that really intense hard work that my uterus should have been doing itself, really, but I had no urge to push. I wasn't ready. And my postpartum with my little girl kind of followed on through that theme. She was a very upset baby, had a lot of colic. I was quite traumatized by everything. My husband was very traumatized by everything, and we were very shaken. I should mention I had also a retained placenta. So after managing to do all of that, kind of still on just gas and air, I was then taken to theatre, given a spinal, had manual removal of the placenta. And that was traumatizing within itself. For a long time, I didn't feel like I wanted another baby. And my husband was like, I can't ask you to go through that again. So he was very like, that's okay. But my little girl grew up. And as she grew up, she was obsessed with dolls. She was obsessed with playing babies. And both me and my husband have a great relationship with our siblings. We've both got siblings. So we started to feel really guilty that we wanted to give her a sibling. So we started to try to be pregnant, and it took quite a long time. I had 2 miscarriages, and I really threw myself into using my science geeky brain to figure out what happened first time and how I could avoid it this time round. So I did a real deep dive into evidence-based podcasts, blogs, looked at the evidence, the research studies themselves, looked at the guidelines that hospitals were following. And I realized that a lot of the things that happened to me, number one, were a choice, and I didn't feel like I had a choice in any of it. And that if I'd have been given a choice, I would have chosen a different path. And that was a real light bulb moment for me. So in my second birth, because of the retained placenta, I did choose to use the midwife-led unit again, just in case that happened again. I didn't want to have a transfer from a home birth. I think looking back, I might have gone for a home birth. That's something that we live and learn. And I had an amazing birth second time around. My husband knew everything about my birth plan. We used a doula to do some birth prep as well. So that's kind of where I kind of saw how a doula worked. I couldn't have a doula at my birth because it was due on Christmas. So no one had availability. No one wanted to be on call over Christmas. So I did a lot of like prep work with a doula, but I knew I wasn't going to have anybody there at my birth. But my husband was a great advocate. And yeah, we went in. I had a really long early labor. It was like 5 days of quite intense contractions that would die out and then come back. And that was quite frustrating. Eventually, we went in. And actually, once I got into hospital, that's when things really started to pick up, because I think I knew that's where I wanted to labor. So I relaxed once I got there and everything went really well. I got in the birth pool. I had a really lovely time in the birth pool. I was coping really well. I did have a little bit of an issue where I was given a vaginal exam, and previously I'd indicated that I might allow them to break my waters. And they took that as full consent. So they were doing the vaginal exam and they broke my waters at that point. So that was through a little bit of a spanner in the works as I then went straight into transition. So it was quite a rocky transition. And during that transition, I started demanding an epidural. And everyone was more than happy for me to have an epidural. So they decided they would walk me down the corridor to the labour room to have my epidural. But literally, I got in the doorway of the labour room and the fetal ejection reflex started. And I just gave birth to my son standing in the doorway of the labour room. So I'd gone from this lovely, like, relaxed midwife-led unit and, like, walked two doors down and given birth in a corridor. And they were like, oh, you don't want to give birth standing, quick, get on the bed. And I was just like, this is happening here. And it did. So that was really good. And I've got some, my husband took some lovely pictures of me like standing up like, ooh, and baby coming. And unfortunately then there was again a little bit of everyone, because of the panic of that change from rooms and the panic of kind of me giving birth in a doorway, everything got a bit stressful, the lights were on. So my third stage was interrupted. And again, I had a retained placenta, but I'd planned for that. So I asked for my husband and baby to come to theatre with me this time. And that was, you know, they did that. And it was a much nicer experience. I was able to have skin to skin while I was having the surgery. My husband knew it was happening, which last time he had no idea because he was just sat in a room waiting for me to come out of theatre. So it was much smoother. And the postpartum was much smoother. And it just taught me the difference a little bit of knowledge can have. And the difference some birth prep, some real birth prep and a birth plan can have. And quite quickly, I was like, my husband was like, can we stop thinking about birth now? Like, we're not having any more kids. Like, you don't need to read all these books anymore. And I was like, no. It's never going to stop.
The opposite. There's millions of women giving birth, babe.
Yeah. I just need to tell them everything that I've learned. So yeah, I waited about a year and then I started my Instagram. And my idea for my Instagram was just to get some of this information that was in my head out of my head and into the world. So I started doing that. And then I realized I couldn't attend birth in person with a one-year-old, but I could help people virtually. So that's what I started to do.
That's amazing. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing your birth stories. I wrote down some notes so that I can go back so you can touch on some things that maybe we can answer. I have like some questions, but I love that you found a way to get the knowledge out. I, as a labor nurse, I feel like I have all this knowledge. Mm-hmm. I have like behind the scenes look of what the doctors are saying that you don't know. And I'm like, oh, you guys need to know this. So that's exactly kind of where I've come from too. And I'm busy at the labor unit. So I also am not in the realm of a doula work. I'm not going to attend births with you, but I definitely can coach to prepare you for it. So I think that's where we get along so well. And I just relate to your stuff so well because that's exactly what you're doing. You're empowering women with knowledge to just like, hey, this exists. Now go out and find, learn more. So it's, and I love that part and that aspect of social media. And you probably do too. Like we feel like we're just like a community or we're women, we're a force, you know, then when we get together and share our knowledge, we're an army and they can, and we're going to battle and we are going to help each other the best we can. We can't do this alone. You know, we can't just, and unfortunately we can't just trust and rely on our doctors or even midwives and hospital to give us all the information. Right. And then, and you're right. It's so many things or choices.
Yeah. Even in this short time that I've been doing it. So I've been doing it for about a year and a half now. Like I've had people like who haven't worked with me directly, but message me after and be like, hey, just want to let you know I've had my baby. It was amazing. And wouldn't have been able to do it without the information you shared. And it's just so amazing. Like my main driver for this is not money. It's just, I want to really help lots of people and really kind of get the information out there So it's really great that social media, I can use that as a tool to get the information out there and help people that maybe can't afford a doula or aren't ready really in that space, but they are looking at information so they can take that in.
How did you come up with the name, the Smart Doula? I like it.
It was a combination of the where I was coming from was smart, so science, geeky, and kind of evidence-based. And then the fact that I'm virtual, so like smartphone. So that was my thoughts behind that. It took me a while to come up with it.
Excellent. I love it. And I love that you bring comedy. You're lighthearted about it. But then when I go and I read the actual caption, it's juicy. There's so much good information in there. And that's why I was like, she gets it. This is not, she knows what's going on. So I love that. If you guys follow me, you know that I'm sharing the Smart Doula stuff because I connect a lot with what she says. And it's funny. I mean, we can use humor as well to capture your attention. And it doesn't have to be so scary because it really isn't. If you take the layers off and you've done the preparation and education, you said, you know, you got to the hospital and you felt more relaxed, right? Because kind of you weren't as scared as the hospital. It was going to be one, you were already comfortable working in a hospital, just like me. So when I got to the hospital, I was able to relax. A lot of people, they get more tense because they're not used to the hospital. That's why I always say, take the hospital tour, go see it, go familiarize yourself with it so that it's not such a scary place. Because when you can go there and you're prepared, then you can relax. So I love that you said that because that happened with me too. Like I was able to relax there until, of course, they start taking your choices away, kind of making it like it's your choice, but it's not.
Well, yeah, I think that's key. And I think now if I was in the space that I was, if I was in having another baby, I would definitely go for a home birth because I see the kind of, I see the evidence, I see the research about that. And also I understand a little bit more about probably the reason I had a retained placenta first time round was caused by the coach pushing and all that stress. And then second time round, again, it was probably caused by the walking down into a different environment. And there was a bit of a stress where my baby, the cord was cut quite quickly and he was taken away. It turned out he was fine. And just those little things probably contributed to the retained placenta again. So I do kick myself a little bit to think like I could have tried for a home birth. And I definitely always, anybody that works with me, right at the beginning, I say, look, have you considered a home birth? Because in the UK, I think it's maybe a little bit more accessible than where you are. Like our NHS, they support home birth mostly. A lot of the hospitals have community home birth teams. So it is a bit more accessible. It's not very well used. And it still has a lot of that.
Got kind a stigma of still.
Everyone's default is the hospital. Yeah. But it is a little bit more accessible, I think.
Yeah. I mean, our insurance doesn't cover it. So that's a huge factor. So if you don't have the money to pay thousands of dollars for the midwife, then the insurance isn't going to cover. They're going to cover the hospital, which is crazy to me because it's going to be more expensive.
Yeah, exactly. That's another thing.
I'm like, well, did they do the math?
But I guess that's a benefit of us having a free.
Crazy. I don't understand it. I want to talk a little bit, let's get into some juicy stuff about labor and birth. Now that we heard your birth story, and now you're probably like me, because I've been doing this about a year and a half too. I had been a labor and delivery nurse for 8 years, but in this last 2 years that I have been really diving into physiological birth, I've learned more in talking with and speaking with doulas, meeting midwives, and I've done my own work outside of the hospital, which I hadn't done for the previous 7 years. I've learned so much in this time. My daughter's 4. I had a great birth. I was like, no, it's perfect. I have an epidural. I did I pushed for 8 minutes. I was very relaxed because I did have a really good understanding and I was very comfortable. But in these last 2 years, I was like, dang it. I would have a home birth. Like I would do this and this and this different. I would have a doula. I would have like, even when you're so prepared, and this might make you feel better, right? You're every time we're going to learn more and learn more and more. I've been probably 13 years studying birth, and I still every day learn something new. It's crazy. So, so we go into our births with what we know, and there's so much that we don't know, even when you're an expert. It's crazy. Even the doctors and the midwives.
I think in an ideal world, you wouldn't have to basically study a degree in birth to give birth. In an ideal world, you could go into a hospital and trust the people there to give you the information that you need to make an informed choice. But that just doesn't happen at the moment. So, and it's not always like demonizing the healthcare staff. It's like you said, like they work there, they follow the policies every day, and they don't necessarily go out and do all the research. And I saw a stat the other day that said it takes like over 12 years for research to go into practice. And that's if it ever does. So, you know, those the hospital staff, and they're just following the policies, and they may know a little bit more, but, you know, that's not their jam. They work in the hospital. They don't do physiological birth as much.
I was a labor and delivery nurse. There's no way I could teach what I know now as a labor and delivery nurse. I've learned so much in just the last 2 years. When you come and you get a labor nurse, I always say like a labor nurse and a doctor and a doula, they're coming with their level of expertise and that role, right? Like, and you can't expect them to do things outside of their role. A labor nurse is there because she understands the equipment. She understands the hospital policies. She understands the doctor's orders when you need a medication. She understands fetal monitoring. She understands all of these things. If you don't need any of those things, she's you're going to see a little panic, but she's like, I don't know what to do. because that's not her role. So she can stand back and she can chart. Okay, she's declining. She can ask you the right questions. She can make sure she offers you things and takes your vital signs. But then you need to have someone like a doula or a midwife present that then can take over when it's a natural physiological birth that you want with less interventions. The more support, the fact that you had a partner that understood everything, you have your friend, anyone in that room should support and advocate for you. Because your nurse is going to be pushing what she knows, and that's it. And the same thing goes with a doctor. A doctor knows medical interventions, diagnoses, and surgeries. He's not going to know what to do with you if you don't need him.
I saw somebody saying the other day, would you hire a pediatrician to babysit your child? And no, you wouldn't. Because, you know, they're a doctor. They're not going to sit in your house and help look after your child if you want to go out for a meal. But that's what, you know, if you're having a straightforward pregnancy and going into labor, you don't need a doctor. You need a doctor if things, you know, if things pathologize and things start happening. But until you get to that point, you don't need a doctor. You need someone that understands the physiological processes.
Exactly. And that's why getting a nurse midwife, someone that can stand back and just observe as your body knows what to do. As the woman, you should be able to give birth with zero education. Your body knows what to do. If you want to have a baby at your house, you know, it's going to happen. What they're there for is the things that could possibly go wrong so that you have a safe and healthy delivery and that you're okay in the end. But most of the time when you're hands off and you just stand back and you don't lead with fear and you're not stressed and it's not chaotic, then things go pretty smoothly. Things happen and that's why they're there, but they need to stand back. Doctors and nurses don't know how to do that because we're trained to step in and intervene and we're all constantly looking for things that are wrong. And if you look for things that are wrong, you can find them if you're not ready. For instance, the laboring down part, we can talk about that a little bit. When you said you pushed for two hours absolutely. Because they told you 10 centimeters, you need to push now. But you said it, you're like, I didn't feel the urge to push, right? They just needed to do something. It's in 10 centimeters, your number, let's do this now. Because evidence-based, evidence is so good, we need to study evidence, but to a degree, you know? Because they say evidence now is against laboring down, so they have the evidence to show that. Right. But where did you get this evidence? What studies were you looking at? We have to be careful. So it's always trusting our intuition and our gut. And the fact that you said that was very interesting to me, that you're like, I didn't feel the urge to push. Right. And they wanted you to.
No, not at all. And it was such hard work. Like, I cannot describe, like, my whole body was on fire. My legs afterwards, it was like I'd done the hardest workout. My thighs, my calves, everything. I had my feet up against the sides of the bed and my ankles were like twisted. So I had sore ankles. Like, the tension in my whole body from trying to force that baby down. Whereas the second time round, it just hit me, and I could do nothing about the fact a baby was coming. And I think I probably did give it a little push on its way because it just felt like the right thing to do, but I didn't need to. It was just, I didn't have a choice. Like, I would prefer to have got in the room rather than birthing in the doorway, but I didn't have a choice. And afterwards, I had none of that kind of, I mean, both times I had a second degree tear, but the second time I didn't know anything about it. Like, afterwards, I didn't know I had a second degree tear. All the pain I had for the first time was all that swelling in my tissues from doing that pushing for such a long time. Whereas the second time round, I was just like, I couldn't tell you if I had a tear or not. They stitched it up and I was on my way.
Yeah. And it was funny, they moved you to the room. But did anyone talk to you that to try to convince you not to get the epidural? Oh, like, you're in transition, you can do this.
That's really
some affirmations, because you probably could have stayed in that room and just delivered.
Oh, yeah, I know. And it was very frustrating. And so these midwife-led units, especially the ones with the attached to the hospital, like, you like to think that the midwives that are in there are the ones that like physiological birth. That would be the ideal, right? But because it's an attached one, you tend to get any midwife who's on shift. Like, some of them are in the labor ward, some of them are in two doors down in the midwife-led unit. And these midwives were very much, they respected my birth plan. I said, I don't want you anywhere near me, basically. And they were happy with that. But they had no helpful knowledge to me. There was one point where, I mean, I've had two back-to-back labors, so I had a lot of back pain. There was one point where I was in quite a lot of pain, and my husband asked them, you know, she's in a lot of pain with her back. Are there any other positions that you could suggest? Is there anything you could suggest for her? And they literally just said, active birth, just, you know, active birth positions. And it was just, such a vague answer. And we were in and we were in this beautiful room. Yeah, we were in this beautiful room with all these like sparkly lights and a beautiful birth pool and beanbags and like a modular bed that you could pull apart and use for different things. And at no point did anyone show us how we could use any of these things. So, like, there was probably lots of amazing things in there that I could have used. I mean, I asked for a birth ball and they brought one and they said, oh, it's a bit flat. And I sat on it and I nearly hit the floor.
Oh,
it was so flat.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And I was like, this is meant to be the birth center. Oh, no. This is meant to be the, like, more holistic.
They had good intentions, huh?
Yeah. So, yeah. But it just wasn't that. And I think if you give birth at home, then you are more likely to get a home birth midwife, or at least a midwife who likes physiological birth. So I think maybe they would have been a bit more helpful. But you're right. Nobody, as soon as I said I want that epidural, I feel like that was something they knew. That's something they knew how to do that. And they were like, oh, she wants us now. So it was like, right, yeah, we can do that. And yeah. All I needed was someone to talk me down. And my poor husband had been that person all that time, talking me down, being really supportive. Like, I couldn't fault him second time round. But, you know, me saying I wanted epidural, he was like, okay, like, yeah. Because I think we had that discussion. And in the past, I've actually suggested to people, you know, an epidural can be a useful tool if you are at the end of your tether, if you need some rest, if you can't do it anymore. You can do things with an epidural that reduce the risks that they come with. So if you really need it, go for it. So he was probably hearing that voice and was like, okay, she needs a rest. Let's go for it. But yeah, he didn't know. But the midwife should have done.
Yeah, it can, and it can be so intense at the end. I've heard people say, I've heard birth stories, and they say, you know, as soon as I asked for the epidural and they said yes, I relaxed. And they, so the fact that you probably knew you were getting one and you were going is like a little less stressed and a little less scary. That transition part is...
I think the walk as well down the corridor, that was probably all I needed.
And the walking. If someone just said, you know, it's almost over, the pain's going to go away soon, and, or, you know, you can do this, you're doing beautiful, the baby's coming, let's walk around a moment, let's get up, let's change your position, the baby probably would have came, no problem, you know. It's, but that's what I'm getting at. Even in the hospital, it's just boggles me that we are not trained in birth. We're not. I can check your cervix. I know the proper vital signs and the labs and the numbers and when to call the doctor and the baby's heart rate and how they're handling contractions, but I'm not too sure how contractions are working. Or, you know, I know baby's fetal position, but how to get the baby in the right position, all these things I had to train on at myself. Do not expect your nurses, especially the younger nurses, as you get more experienced, you learn more and more. But even I've seen nurses that have been there 30 years, they know what they know and they know it really well, but it's not birth. It's not. And I was trained by some really great nurses and I was never taught anything like this, like what to do during transition, how to help someone that doesn't have an epidural. No, none of it. I had to learn it all myself. I had to start asking. That's why I started travel nursing and going around other places. I started asking why a lot. And I started, because of that, I started getting anxiety attacks. Like I couldn't, like I started questioning doctors all the time. Like, does she really need Pitocin right now? Like, why don't we give her a couple of hours without interfering?
Yeah.
Try that.
Yeah.
And yeah. I just couldn't handle it anymore. And then once I started talking to more doulas and people like you, it's like, oh, I get it.
Yeah, I have a friend who's also a doula, and she is so into kind of like birth biomechanics and kind of like the spinning babies things. And she quite often attends hospital births, and like it's like, you know, things are progressing, we have to start oxytocin, we need to go to theatre. And she quite often will be like, can we just try this, and puts mum in the position or uses like a scarf and does other things, and all of a sudden baby's there. And the midwives are like, you'll have to teach us how to do that. Like, wow, like I can't believe that works so well. And it's really hard, isn't it? Because you're not taught that. As a midwife, you're not taught that. And it's nice, actually, in our local area, one of the home birth midwives has started running a birth biomechanics course for parents. So that's amazing. That gives me faith that some of the home birth midwives know that information and will use it, which is great.
Absolutely. I started getting into everything. As soon as I learned, I was spinning babies, I was body biomechanics, I was hypnobirthing, everything that you could... I could learn. I started reading every book, from the most more conservative ones to the more, you know, home birth midwife books, how to be a doula. I just like couldn't get enough and still reading every day. I'm picking up a book and reading. And it just, like I said, I'm learning something new every day. So I'm praying that if you're a nurse or you're a doula or a midwife or a doctor, pick up some books that you wouldn't think you would need for an understanding, or ask to attend a home birth, or try to find one, or speak to someone that is not in your normal team, like a doula. I think they have like doula workshops where they can speak with nurses and doctors. It's because we're a team, right? We all need to understand what our roles are so that we have more respect for them, so that, and understand that when the woman comes in, she is the leader. She is the boss. How are we serving her? Are we serving her the best we can? Right. And you and I were working with her virtually to say, like, you are the boss. You are the leader. How are you going to lead your team? Or are you walking in there and you're saying, okay, I'm here. Do what you need to do on me.
A lot of that work happens before you give birth, doesn't it? A lot of that work, getting that understanding that you are the boss and kind of your, you know, getting down to it, your legal rights as a birthing person, then if you know that when you go in, you can't learn that while you're in labor. That's impossible. Like, you need to do the prep. So that's why I think virtual work can work really well, because a lot of it is before the birth.
Absolutely. Exactly. I say I coach more on communication and leadership skills than I do on actual birth, right? How are you bringing in the experts and understanding what role they are playing? And then also understanding, have an understanding of basic birth 101 and what your body's doing and the mechanics and nutrition, movements, have that basic understanding. But please understand who you are hiring on your team and what they're capable of helping you with, and trusting them, asking the right questions. I'm sure that's what you do too, right? You're just like, look, this is, we can't teach you everything a doctor can know. And that can feel so overwhelming, and you don't need to, but you need to understand what choices you have. You have to have the basic understanding that it is your choice. All these things are from an IV to your birth position.
Yeah, I think that's the key.
Like, it's all your choice at the end. Who delivers you? Your choice. And if you don't know that, and you're not understanding how a leader works, then you are definitely handing over your birth to the hospital and whoever happens to be there that day. And however they're coming in, whether it's maybe they just had a traumatic birth and they're scared and they're just, or they're tired, and they're going to put it on you and it's more convenient for them to do this or this. That's what you're walking into. If that's okay for you, okay. But I think you and I are both coming in with the knowledge of that it shouldn't be that way, unfortunately. And we're trying to come up with it so we're not so angry. I'm not so pissed off that we have to do this to women. But
I have my moments. But yeah.
Like Kimmy, she's a midwife in UK. I know she's pissed. And I'm like, I get it, girl. I understand. But we have to use humor. Sometimes we don't have to lead with anger or fear, and try slowly to change this hospital system. So, you know, the midwife led units are, sometimes we have them here too, but not. We call our units birth centers now at the hospital. And that's it. That's as far as we've gone. We just changed the name. Hopefully that will compete. Like, oh, don't worry, it's a birth center. No, it's not. It's a labor unit. Get out of here. So it's just funny. We're trying to do our best, you know, but there's just so much we need to do. Like these, even the midwives, you have to understand, we call them more med wives, right? Because they are still run by hospital policy.
I think that's a chemism as well. Yeah.
They're run inside of the hospital.
Midwife-led
units are still run by hospital policies and protocols, and they're still hired by the hospital. They're still working under the intending of the doctor.
Yeah. And I think if the majority of people go to hospital, then birth is going to become more and more medicalized. So I really do think women need to start voting with their feet and thinking for themselves. And if you go back a couple of years ago, the UK wasn't seen as like a bad place to give birth. Our C-section rates weren't bad. And they're now at like 50%. And it's just, you know, and induction rates are sky high. Like having a spontaneous vaginal birth now is rare. It's so rare. And that's because the majority of people are using the hospital where birth is medicalized. And that's the route that you get on when you attend hospital. And if you don't end up with a cesarean, then you're lucky. You've done a load of work and managed to fight for yourself. But it shouldn't be a fight.
My husband
in my second birth shouldn't have been having to fight off the midwives who wanted to put an IV in me. You shouldn't have had to have been doing that. It should have been a no, thank you. End of the day. It shouldn't have to be a continuous conversation, but it is. So, and even if you go in prepared, it's very easy. You can't be like, I'm definitely prepared. It's definitely not going to happen to me, because, like you say, you don't know who's going to come in the room, what they're thinking, what their thoughts on birth are, whether they're going to accept your no or whether they're going to push. You don't know that. You can't control that. So, if you go into a hospital, then, you know, you're heading into that 50% cesarean rate, unfortunately.
Exactly. Yeah. So learn how to find the nurse that can help you.
And I definitely don't have I'm not against cesareans. Like, if a woman chooses a cesarean, all for it. And they are a wonderful tool to, you know, when they're needed to safely give birth. But if, you know, at the moment we've got it's about probably half and half. Half of people are choosing cesareans from the get-go, like elective cesareans, and the rest of them are emergencies.
Wow, we're not at the elective cesareans yet, but it's pretty easy to be diagnosed and move to a C-section. About 30-40%, depending on where you live in the U.S., which is still high for doctors to be recommending that many C-sections. It really does mean we are getting some things wrong when it comes to birth, and when it's medically necessary, or you have trauma from a previous delivery and you're choosing a C-section, is the doctor really diving into why you are choosing to a C-section? Is there trauma that we can work through first? Is there a fear, maybe irrational fear of a vaginal birth that we can try to understand first? Are we trying to fix that? Or are we like, okay, we'll just schedule you? They're not giving the proper time and energy to it.
No, and I think even kind of the ones that are down as chosen, like electives, it's like, is it really your choice? Or have you been told your baby is so big you can never give birth to your baby? Or have you been told your baby's breech and it's too dangerous for a vaginal delivery? Like, they're elective, like the person at the end of the day has chosen that, but was that an informed choice or was it fear-mongered? And I think that's kind of very difficult to pick apart. There are for sure women who choose a cesarean. For them, that's the empowered choice, 100%. But there are others who feel like they have no other choice.
Right. And then they're going home thinking it was in a medical reason. But in the notes, it's elective, right? Because they can't, for insurance purposes, it's not really medical. It was a choice that you gave with the information that you had, which probably wasn't all the information, unfortunately. And that's why you need a virtual doula and a virtual labor coach. Yeah. So we can go over that information so that if you get this unexpected information, let's say they hire you and they're speaking with you throughout their pregnancy, everything's going fine. They're like, oh, this is great. I'm building my team. My partner's involved. I'm enjoying my classes. And then all of a sudden you go to your 38-week or 37-week appointment and your doctor suggests an induction or a C-section. And just the way he phrases things makes you think like, oh my gosh, like, I want my baby to be okay. I guess this is what we're doing. All of a sudden you made the appointment and you go home and you're like, okay, I need to call Charlotte right now. And, you know, and you get on a call with her and then you go over the evidence and what exactly they're trying to say and do. And, you know, what time of year is it?
And the risks of the induction as well, which don't often get told. Yeah. Yeah.
That is priceless to have that person that you trust that has done the research and that understands, like for my case, I understand a lot of how the doctors think and the way they work on the back end. So that we're here as a support for you to bounce off this information so that you can make the best choice for you. Because then afterwards, you know, how many people have you spoken to that after their birth, they said, wait, if I could go back and ask these questions, or I don't think they were actually telling me the whole truth on that. It's too many. So we don't want you to feel that way.
Or they have that elective cesarean for that big baby and the baby comes out and it's totally average size.
I know, so many times.
And, you know, baby might have been really big, but it's understand, like, you feel robbed, right, at that point, if you hadn't had it explained to you that it could possibly be that baby's not big. That's all someone needs to say, like, okay, these scans can be quite inaccurate, but we think baby is big and we suggest X, Y, and Z. But if you're not told that when you have that cesarean and your baby is small, or
not only the scans,
size,
but the due dates.
And no one then picks that
up. Yeah, the due dates can be off. We've had C-sections that we thought were 39 weeks and they turn out like 36 weeks, 35 weeks. And we're looking at this baby, we're like, that's not a 37-weeker. That's not, you know, things can be off. So what was the reason? And if they had known how many weeks they were they make a different choice? Things can be off. I know it's scary, but that's what we're here for, is to kind of inform you so that it doesn't have to be scary. It's a natural process, but yeah, and we just love this baby so much. We want to be safe ourselves, and we want to do it right. We want to get it right. You know, I think that's the most important thing, is we get it right. So we do a lot of research on the best detergent to use and the best cleaners in our house and the best food to prepare. And, you know, we don't want to be this chemical. We're not going to eat sushi anymore. And we're not doing this and this because we care so much. But then it's like, when it comes to the birth, we just can't.
And we get like car seats and prams and like bassinets and bedside cots. And
we want to get it right. We care so much. But then when it comes to the birth, we kind of just like hand it over. That's really a lot of where our efforts should go, because at the end, the baby just needs the mom, and the dad doesn't need all these other things.
I think, I mean, I was listening, like, I know we've mentioned Kemi a few times, but I was listening to a podcast she did the other day, and it was very much, you know, okay, for the hospital, the baby gets discharged. That's the end of it for them, you know, baby's at home. But with an induction, epidural, with episiotomy, like, and forceps, all those things affect, and cesarean, all those things affect much longer health for you and your baby. So if you're not told that, then you don't know. But if you were aware of the risks of those things when they were put on the table in front of you, alongside the other option of a physiological birth, which we know has so many health benefits, like, would you have made a different choice? And a lot of people probably yes, because like you say, they want to do it right, but they don't know. You don't know what the right option is.
You don't know where the first intervention is going to lead to. It can snowball very quickly. From getting an IV to a cervical exam, it seems harmless, no big deal. And that's how your provider and your nurses are going to kind of make it feel like, no big deal. Breaking your water, no big deal. They don't tell you, oh, by the way, it significantly increases your risk of infection, cord prolapse, the time clock. Now we're going to be timing you. We're going to want to add Pitocin if you're not progressing fast enough after we break your water. Like, there's things that they need to include when they're explaining, and they don't. They just don't at all. They say it'll make it go faster, and then they leave it at that. You're like, well, I want it to go faster. That sounds great.
Yeah.
And they
I'd like this to end. I want
my baby. If you get fluid, the fluid that we give you, if you have an IV attached and all of a sudden you're getting maintenance fluid, for every little D cell your baby has, we'll give you half a liter of fluid. You get an epidural, another liter of fluid. All of a sudden you have 3 or 4 liters of fluid during your labor, and your baby's coming out weighing way more than it would have. And now it's going to pee it all out. And that first 24 hour wait is going to be so like such a drop that they're going to be like, oh my gosh, she needs to eat. We're going to give her formula. Now you're formula feeding. Now you're feeling a little guilty. Now you're trying to latch and you're a little panicked and you can't rest. And oh my gosh, just because you got fluid.
That literal situation happened to me first time round. So that was literally my breastfeeding journey with my first. Like, I had so much fluid because my heart rate was high. And if I'd have stopped to think about it, I've had various hospital admissions for other things. And whenever I am in any sort of pain, my heart rate and blood pressure skyrocket. That's just me. But in my first labor, it was like pumping me full of fluids for that. And yeah, exactly that. My daughter's dropped so much weight after I gave birth to her, and I panicked and started supplementing. And then I was like, and she didn't want to latch because she was full. And then I stopped breastfeeding. And, you know, I also then couldn't wee because I had so much fluid, didn't wee. That probably contributed to my retained placenta. So, you know, like you say, that one little thing, it doesn't feel totally harmless, isn't it? Let's give you some fluid. Could just drink some water. Like, it's literally, oh, it's just the same as drinking water, but it's not.
It's not. We have access and we can give you a lot. I'm changing that bag a lot. And I didn't even realize it most of the time I was a labor nurse, right? I know now. I'm a whole different nurse than I was when I first started, I'll tell you that. But yeah, there's just too many things that people don't know, and that your nurses don't know either. So they can't tell you what they don't know. And they think they're looking out for your best interest. So they're going to be like, she wants it to come faster. We can come faster. But I've seen so many times they'll break your water or they'll do things. And then meconium will show up, or the mom is stressed for whatever reason and not going to continue dilating. Maybe she doesn't want to lay in all this wet fluid. And now she has an epidural and her body's like cold or she's uncomfortable. She's not going to dilate very easily like that. Baby's not going to get in the best position. And before you know it, she has a C-section because she's tired. She's uncomfortable. Maybe she's risking infection. And it's all because she broke her water. It was so painful. And she got an epidural. You know, it's just one thing leads to another. And I'm not saying that these choices, if you make them, are wrong. I'm just saying make them understanding that these are all possibilities. Right? So that you can prepare for them. If you want fluid, if you're dehydrated and this is the best thing,
I mean, if you have
great, but you're going to understand if I get a lot of fluid, then my baby is going to weigh more. So I'm not going to worry too much about that first weight. Right.
And I need to make sure I'm going to the toilet.
I'm
going to
make sure I'm emptying my bladder. I'm going to have my partner writing down in a notebook every time they give me fluid. So I know how much and how many times I go to the bathroom. And if he can't, then my sister's going to be there to take over.
So second time round.
Because the nurses are not going to be doing it.
So second time round, because I knew the whole heart rate, fluids, cascade, I went in and I was like, I'm not having fluids if I have a high heart rate. And I can evidence that I'm not dehydrated because my husband has written down everything I have drunk. And he has also written down every time I've been for a wee. Here is your evidence. I'm not dehydrated. I'm not having the IV. I mean, you should be able to just say no, right? But sometimes it helps to have that backup. Yeah.
But then to yourself, sometimes if you don't believe it strongly, then you need to convince them, right? You're like, and you know, you're like, look, I'm not getting an IV. It should end right there. But then if you have that evidence too, look, I'm not dehydrated. You need to know, you know, sometimes that'll shut them up. Sometimes. But oh man, Charlotte, I had such an amazing time chatting with you. I could literally talk to you all day about this stuff, but we're hitting an hour and that means I loved it. Yeah. I love having this conversation. Is there anything you want to leave anyone listening right now with some information, and then we'll add where we can find you, but any tip?
I think my main tip is if you ask any question, can I do that? Is always yes. You have number one choice. You're in control. And if your doctor or your midwife is saying you can't do that, that's not right. And you could possibly choose a different midwife or choose a different doctor if you can.
I love that. I always say, I'm like, get let and allow out of your vocabulary. You're allowed to do whatever you want. Should might be a good one. Recommend is a good word. But let, yeah, forget about it. It's going to be a yes. They are not your parents. This is not jail. You're not five. You got this. I love that, Charlotte. And where can we find you?
So I am the Smart Doula at the Smart Doula on Instagram. And I've got a website as well, which is this www.thesmartdoula.com.
Excellent. So if you're looking for a virtual doula, please reach out to her and check out her website, thesmartdoula.com. Charlotte, thank you so much. This was such a pleasure. And I'll continue sharing your reels because they're fantastic.
I'll continue to make them because I enjoyed doing it.
Excellent. Thanks, Charlotte. Bye. Well, thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. Thank you, Charlotte, for joining us on the BirthLink podcast. Remember, she's at the period smart period doula at Instagram, and you can also find her at thesmartdoula.com. Yeah, just know your options, guys. And even with doulas, don't just interview one or two, like interview a few, because it's going to be a lot of it based on your vibe, personality, what you're into, right? Maybe you do want to know their opinions on things so that you know what biases are coming in with, if at all. Okay. So interview a bunch of us. There's no competition with me. It's a world of abundance. So I was very, very happy to have her on and to learn more about her services. So message me and message her and interview us both if you're looking for a coach. Alrighty. Next week, I'm going to get into more of your options when it comes to a birth doula and or coach. See you then. Bye.
Thank you for listening to My Friend's a Nurse presents the Birthlink podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and found it valuable. Before we go, a quick reminder. The information shared on this podcast is for educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. Always consult with your healthcare provider for any medical concerns or questions. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your friends. Your support helps us reach more people and continue to bring you great content. Until next time, stay healthy and stay informed.